From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, it's an all-Travis show.
Aw, shucks. I'll chat with Connor Prairie's Ellen Rosenthal, Young Actors Theater Justin Wade, and also with Claude McNeil about his new illustrated history book about French Lick and West Baden.
And of course, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Connor Prairie Interactive History Park, Indiana's only Smithsonian affiliate, will transform into a Civil War experience the weekend of May 21st and 22nd. Guests looking for excitement can step back into the Civil War era as reenactors from across the Midwest bring the Civil War to life and Connor Prairie's historic areas turn into Confederate and Union camps. New activities marking the 150th anniversary of the war include special programs highlighting the stories of Indiana regiments that fought in the Civil War. Travis DiNicola spoke with Connor Prairie's president and CEO, Ellen Rosenthal, about this and also about a new permanent Civil War exhibit.
Lots of stuff going on at Connor Prairie this summer. The season has just really sort of opened for you guys, right?
That's right.
Getting opening.
Mm-hmm. We open the historical areas, the outside areas, on April 1st, although the indoor areas with Discovery Station and Crafts Corner are open throughout the winter.
Year long. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about, I mean, there's always a lot of great stuff going on in the summer, of course, at Connor Prairie, but the Civil War weekend that you guys are putting on, this is sort of a whole new experience for Connor Prairie. Of course, it's in the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, and there's a lot of historical documentaries and books and things coming out, and this is the way that you guys are approaching it, and I'm trying to sort of picture what this is going to be like out at Connor Prairie, but tell me more.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me tell you that there will be a Civil War weekend, and that's a weekend, that's the weekend of...
The 21st and 22nd.
21st and 22nd. And that weekend we've been doing for several years, or many years. Well, it includes hundreds of reenactors in clothing with horses, and they put on a battle. But that only lasts 2 days. This year, in honor of, not in honor, but in commemoration of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, we are opening a new experience.
Okay.
And if it's difficult to understand, you're not alone, because it's the first time anybody has tried to do this kind of experience. So let me just tell you a little bit about what makes it unique. It is recreating an episode of the Civil War, the most important episode of the Civil War that took place on Indiana soil, which was the raid of General John Hunt Morgan into southern Indiana. And it recreates it from looking at the perspective of the people who lived on the home front. And it's in a recreation of the town of DuPont, which was part of one of the places that General John Hunt Morgan visited. And in authentic buildings, we will be using costumed characters like we usually do, but we will also be using some what we call theatrical wizardry, including Pepper's ghosts and scrims, hidden videos that appear magically and then disappear to recreate the story.
This is very different from the type of presentations and reenactments you've done before.
Right. What some people have said that it's like the next generation of Prairie Town, meaning that it's not just with first-person interpreters or first-person costume staff, as we usually have, but using some of the means of the 21st century, although they're not the latest innovations. They're really technology that's been used before, just used
sure.
in a different way.
And many historical museums, I'm thinking of the Lincoln Museum, use sort of really interesting technology in their presentations. But it is the first that I've heard it being used sort of in an outdoor type of museum like Conner Prairie is.
As I said, I'm happy to announce that we just received a $300,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And when we presented the idea to the program officer at the National Endowment for the Humanities, this was 6 months ago, mm-hmm. she said, she listened, and then she said, has Conner Prairie done this before? And we said, no. And she said, has anybody else tried to do this before? And we said, no. And she said, well, I think this will be important, not just for Conner Prairie, but for the entire museum field.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Well, how great, what a great project to be working on, and I'm sure everyone just must be so excited to debut this. Now, when does this Civil War experience actually open up? It's not open yet, or is it open?
No, it is not open yet. It's coming together as we speak.
Okay.
Step by step. It's mm-hmm. I love to go out every couple of days to see what's happened next. It opens to the public on Saturday, June 4th.
Okay.
And
so
then,
it won't be open for the big Civil War weekend, but then afterwards it will be open on a regular basis starting June 4th.
Right.
Okay.
So every day that Conner Prairie is open, which is 6 days a week, mm-hmm. Tuesday through Sunday, the same hours as Conner Prairie, it is the same price as admission. The one thing that will change mm-hmm. is that when you come in to buy your admission ticket, you will be told that you are volunteering to defend the state from Morgan, this rogue Confederate general that invaded Indiana in July of 1863, and you will be given your enlistment papers. So that's the one thing that will change, and we will ask visitors if they really feel prepared mm-hmm. to volunteer and defend their state. So,
wow, that's a very cool experience you've created up there. Now, will this be for all ages? Will it be appropriate for?
Well, that's a great question. This is a matter of actually staff discussion because I would say it's an intense experience, mm-hmm. although it's not a Civil War battle. It is more terrifying because you will experience, along with the people of DuPont, Indiana, what it felt like to unexpectedly have Confederates at your door, because mm-hmm. Morgan invaded with 2,500 trained cavalry.
Wow.
All the able-bodied men were off at war, and all of a sudden they were in towns in southern Indiana. And it will work. It is intended to work sort of on an adult level, a high school level, a middle school, and upper elementary level.
Okay.
But it will be intense, yeah. So some people have said, probably for kids 8 and up. I have 3 boys. I think my boys would have loved it even at age 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like parents make choices about the intensity of the movie that kids watch. They'll have to make choices about this. But we actually have another alternative, which I'd love to take a moment
sure,
to
please.
Tell you about. And it is called River Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be part of the larger area that is devoted to the Civil War, but it will be a separate area, and it will be for children.
Okay.
And it is an 1860s themed children's and family play area that includes an indoor space with a climber that goes up to the ceiling and a play area with little toy soldiers on it and dress up, and an outdoor area with a water table and water cannons mm-hmm. that are supposed to be fired at targets, not at each other. But I think
good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Right. On hot days, it will probably be great. So
that's not anywhere near the balloon, right?
No,
okay.
It's not near the balloon.
You're not going to have, you know, water cannons shooting down the balloon. So, no.
So my criteria is I've had 3 boys, and I've always thought when my boys were, 3, 7, and 10, would they have loved this? Mm-hmm. Yes, they really would have loved it.
It just sounds great. I mean, and there's always so many neat things going out there. I mean, I just mentioned the Bloom, which started about a year ago, which is just such a neat addition. Of course, there's the summer, the ISO has the concerts on the Symphony on the Prairie throughout the summer, and then other events as well. Ellen, it seems like you really enjoy sort of coming up with these new ideas and new things and sort of creating these different experiences.
I personally do, but it's not just me. I mean, we, Connor Prairie changed about 7 or 8 years ago and really came to understand. We changed our mission statement, mm-hmm. which now reads that our goal is to inspire learning and curiosity about Indiana's past. And so we try now to engage and mm-hmm. really make things fun and find every way possible to really get people and children in particular hooked in and really curious. So I am amazed by the kinds of ideas the staff comes up mm-hmm. with, like the Animal Encounters Barn, where there are animals of all kinds, baby animals. It's not a petting zoo because you really are coming to understand how farmers in the past bred different kinds of animals, but kids can pet them and touch them, and they can, even if an animal is giving birth, we will invite mm-hmm. families in and school groups in to actually watch it and hold a 15-minute-old animal. So that was not my idea at all. That was a staff idea. And they have really taken off on this, thinking through what would get people excited about the past and just run with it. And that's terrific.
Well, the work that you and your staff have done has been recognized in many ways. One of the most exciting ways, I think, is somewhat recently, last winter, you were invited to the White House. Tell me a bit about that.
Oh, well, I'll be happy to tell you about that, because this is where our two organizations come together, right?
That's right.
Connor Prairie received last fall the Institute of Museum and Library Services National Medal. That's the highest award that's given to museums nationally. And we received it because of the great work we are doing in inviting the community in and working with the community to enrich the lives of everybody in the greater Indianapolis area. And we were invited to the White House and asked to bring a representative from a community group that had really benefited from working with Connor Prairie. And we had done a wonderful project with Indy Reads several years ago, which was a year-long curriculum for adult literacy students. And you know better than I, Travis.
Well, that's, as a lot of listeners know, when I'm not on Art of the Matter, my day job is as executive director for Indy Reads. But this was actually a program that took place before I became executive director there.
Mm-hmm. And it was Connor Prairie really focuses on generating conversation, intergenerational conversation, and taking advantage of the social experience. We created this curriculum program that wasn't just for the student, but for their entire family, mm-hmm. allowing them to be the expert at Connor Prairie and bring their families. And Randy French, who is the most phenomenal adult literacy student who is still involved with mm-hmm. Indy Reads, came with me to receive the award for Michelle Obama at the White House, and he was... It was a
very cool experience, just from everything I've heard.
Very, very cool experience. Yeah. Once in a lifetime.
And Randy's a great guy. He also serves as a volunteer for Indy Reads and is on our board of directors. Congratulations on that award. I mean, that's a huge award. I believe only 5 are given each year, and Connor Prairie is the only one to receive one in Indiana.
Right. Connor Prairie was the only one to receive one in Indiana. I think we're the only living history museum that's received one in 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
So it was a fabulous honor. Now, the Indianapolis area has already received, the Children's Museum has received one, and the IMA has received one. So it was a great honor to be added to that group.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on that. A lot of other great things coming up at Connor Prairie this summer. Very, very briefly, tell me about your involvement with StoryCorps.
Oh, as a result of winning the National Medal, part of the package was winning $10,000, which is always nice, but they also arranged for StoryCorps to visit mm-hmm. and do 16 recordings of pairs of people's experiences as they relate to Connor Prairie.
Many people know StoryCorps. It's broadcast every Friday morning here on WFYI. It's a national initiative with people basically sharing their stories on the radio.
And StoryCorps is all of the interviews are preserved at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. It's the largest oral history project of its kind. And one of the interviews of the 16 interviews will be processed by StoryCorps and will mm-hmm. probably be aired nationally.
Oh, great.
But we're partnering with WFYI mm-hmm. to edit, I guess, and produce yeah. several other ones. So they will be available on our website and for guests to listen to.
Very cool. Looking forward to hearing those as well. Ellen, congratulations on all the great work that Connor Prairie is doing. It's great to hear about it.
Travis DiNicola with Connor Prairie's president and CEO, Ellen Rosenthal. The Civil War experience takes place the weekend of May 21st and 22nd. For more information, you can visit ConnorPrairie.org, where you can also learn more about the Raid on Indiana exhibit, which opens June 4th. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Thumbelina, Pinocchio, The Crucible, and Once Upon a Teen. All upcoming productions in May performed by kids who are part of Young Actors Theater. Travis DiNicola spoke with Justin Wade, the Executive Artistic Director, and Director Ben Jones of YAT to find out more.
Justin, let's start off with a quick rundown. What is Young Actors Theater?
Young Actors Theater is actually the oldest independent youth theater program in Indianapolis. A lot of people don't know that, but it was started in 1976 by Charlotte Kaufman, and our mission is to instill confidence, creativity, and discipline through the art of theater. One of the other things that I think a lot of people don't realize about our theater and what makes us unique to the city is the fact that everybody that signs up in our program, our entire point for them is to learn life lessons through theater. So to use confidence, creativity, and discipline that they can use in their daily lives no matter what they do. I like to always say that we're not trying to build superstars or child mm-hmm. stars. We're trying to build future community members and people that can give back to our entire community in all kinds of different ways.
I think that's awesome. I know that's a big part of what you do and a big part of your mission. But you guys also do some great shows, and you got four big shows coming up in May. Thumbelina, Pinocchio, The Crucible, and Once Upon a Teen. I want to hear about these four shows. They're all taking place at the Athenaeum. Am I correct? They're all different age groups of kids that are participating?
They are. So we've got kindergarten through seventh graders in Pinocchio and Thumbelina. And this is the end of our fall session, so these kids have taken classes with us since the beginning of September. Oh, excuse me. This
spring.
Is the spring session.
Yeah, you know.
So that in this one,
it just doesn't feel like spring out there a lot lately.
Beginning of February, and they so this is the end of that in May okay. is the full featured shows.
So this is what they've been working
yes.
towards. I mean, I know that the classes and the rehearsals, this isn't all about the show. There's a lot of other things going on,
right.
But at the same time, there's still that sort of prize at the end.
Oh, definitely. And this is the accumulation of everything. We do a lot of side projects, too, at the Fringe Building and the Downtown Library. And this is our big featured shows that we do two times a year mm-hmm. in January and in May. And then also our 8th through 12th grade group is ending in The Crucible and Once Upon a Teen. One thing I want to point out, too, about our 8th through 12th grade group is you say that a lot of the kids are good at acting, too. It goes beyond these life skills and into the realm of theater.
Sure.
And we have so many teenage kids that have done over 10 plays with us. It kind of astounds me. The other day I asked them, I said, how many of you have done over 10 plays with Young Actors Theater? And I couldn't believe how many hands came up. And then we get into a number of kids who have done up to 20 shows with us, and it's really starting to show in their acting. A lot of them have become extremely strong, and I really believe that's because they have done so many shows, just plain and simple,
sure. yeah.
by being up on stage that much and becoming comfortable, and it's really starting to show, and it shows in both The Crucible and Once Upon a Teen.
Okay, well, I know pretty much, and I'm sure most of our listeners know, you know, Thumbelina, Pinocchio, the Crucible, but what's Once Upon a Teen? Ben, you're directing that, correct?
Yes, I am.
Tell me about that show.
Once Upon a Teen is it's a comedy slash tragedy at the same time. It deals with an issue of child abuse, And it's depicted through classical fairy tales in a modern world. So you've got characters like Rapunzel and Snow White and Briar Rose or Sleeping Beauty. And all of them, it's an all-girls school, and they're all going to high school together. Hmm. And the three girls it focuses on are Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, and Snow White. And they all have different modern names because I assume of copyright laws or whatever. But yeah, it's also the relationships they have with their moms. And you find, I mean, there's... It's funny, but yet it is a wide eye-opener to a lot of people.
How'd you guys go about choosing this play?
I've always been in love with fairy tales, and I love fairy tales, and I love, like, watching the kids' shows and stuff like that, and I was just like, and I stumbled across it one day, and it was, like, issue of child abuse, and I was like, mm-hmm. How does that deal with, you know, modern fairy tales? So
sure.
I began to read the show, and I fell in love with the message, and it also didn't hurt that there were 12 girl parts and 2 boy parts when most of our kids mm-hmm. are girls.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and then I was like, oh, there's so many strong female parts. I could feature so many girls in this. And it was just, it kind of seemed right for this session.
Well, and I know that Justin's been involved with Young Actors Theater forever and a day, pretty much. But, Ben, tell me about your involvement with YAT.
My involvement was when I was a young actor.
you started through the program?
I started
Excellent.
Myself.
Excellent.
Okay. I did direct him as a...
Yeah. the first time... Actually, Justin's first show directing by himself was my first
yes.
session.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Okay.
Him playing the
so
lead.
I was, yeah, I was Aladdin when we did Aladdin. And it was... I just fell in love with, you know... acting even more, and I just mm-hmm. fell in love with the company, and I really looked to Justin for guidance throughout that, you know, all of high school and stuff like mm-hmm. that. He really helped me, and he even prepared me for college auditions and stuff like that. And then when I moved back to Indianapolis, I was like, hey, is there any way I can help? And then just things kind of fell into place, and he's like, actually, I'd like you to be the new assistant director. And then I started directing my own shows.
Now,
and...
had you directed before at that point?
Or,
I mean, that's
no.
a whole different beast to take on in
it,
the theater.
It is. And I remember coming to him one time in fall saying, Justin, I'd like to try directing. Could I mm-hmm. try something? And I did All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten
yeah,
with
okay.
a group of kids at the Fringe Building. And he was like, oh, this was really good. Let's, you know, see what else you could do. And then actually a year ago, my main stage directorial debut was with mm-hmm. Little Women with
okay.
a group of girls. And then it just kind of progressed from there. And I mean, it's something I've
Excellent.
Grown to love.
Which
so.
we've been super lucky lately in being able to have more directors,
right.
Adding more classes. Our classes continue to fill up. And we've also been lucky to have more and more side projects.
Right.
So... Our teenage group keeps doing these teens mm-hmm. issues plays where we pick out
right.
teens issues. We talked a little bit about this last time, actually, we did this show. But it's something that's been so successful in the community. And I feel really good about YAT's partnerships right now. And I feel like we're going to be able to see even more directors doing different things with our program as more and more kids want to sign up.
Well, I do want to emphasize that, you know, even though it's kids performing, the plays that you guys put on at YAT, they're great to see for families, for kids to go to. You know, you don't have to have kids in the production to enjoy the show.
Oh, that is so true. And mm-hmm. I guarantee you that if you do have kids, that they would have a blast at Thumbelina and Pinocchio for younger kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one of the coolest things is when you see really young kids come
mm-hmm.
in, the look that they get in their eye when they see other kids their age performing.
Sure.
And there's always one or two that they kids that they know, and then this whole group of kids that they don't know, because we have kids coming from, I believe right now the numbers that they're coming from 65 different schools in the greater Indianapolis
wow.
area. So there's a representation
That's
of
fantastic.
Every side
yeah.
of town.
Yeah.
And I think the kids, when they come see that, even at a really young age, get a sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes them feel like this is something cool going on in my community that I can relate to, and it's different to them because most of them have never seen a play before. Most young kids that even mm-hmm. sign up for an acting class nowadays, if I ask them, have you ever seen a play before, there's always just a few that have.
Hmm.
They can relate to the art of acting more through movies and stuff online
sure.
than they can in this hands-on environment, which I want to just say one thing real quick about that, too. It's awesome how... And I love technology and everything about it, but it is awesome to have a couple of hours where kids put all the technology down
mm-hmm.
and everybody just does basic acting. I think that is something that feels unique to them.
Tell me about what's going on this summer, because I know that one of the best ways, I think, to get kids involved in your program, in acting, in theater, you know, is to see something and to get a sense of what you do, and then to follow up with the classes. And you guys have a summer session, right?
Yes, we do. And we are taking registrations right now for our summer program. Our full session summer program is all through June and July, and that's for kindergarten through 12th graders. And we also have 8 different workshops, and those workshops are everything from improvisation workshops to acting in front of the camera. They're all listed on our website at www.yatkids.org.
Cool. Very good. Well, it sounds like you got a lot going on right now, and wish you guys the best of luck with it. Still amazes me you put on 4 shows like over the course of 2 weeks there. I mean,
it's an undertaking, but it's fun. It's fun. I love it. I refuse to say that it's stressful. I love every second of it. I love what I do.
What was the number we came up with? A number of actually how many performances were each? Was it like?
It is like right now, I believe it's
it's
over
20
because we have some free library performances that are previews. So it's over 20 over a few weekends.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming to our studio. I'll let you guys get back to work.
Travis DiNicola with Justin Wade, the Executive Artistic Director of Young Actors Theater, and Director Ben Jones. All 4 of their upcoming May productions, Thumbelina, Pinocchio, The Crucible, and Once Upon a Teen, take place at the Athenaeum at the intersection of Mass Ave and Michigan. More information about the shows is available at yatkids.org. That's yatkids.org. Oh, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do you know what this Sunday is?
Well, let's see. It's the 8th. I know that much. Am I forgetting something?
Your mother might remind
you. Oh, there we go.
Moms
That's
are good
right.
at that.
That's right. If, in fact, this is a good reminder for everyone out there listening, if you have not realized it yet, Mother's Day is Sunday.
That's right. Yes. So join us, because we have some ideas for things you might want to take your mom or your mother-in-law or your grandmother or a new mother out to on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? On Mother's Day and other days,
right.
too.
That's right.
You know, when I think of my mom, I think of murders. She's a big mystery fan, actually.
you scared me there.
Is what I was getting at, of course. And Civic Theater is the musical comedy Murders of 1940, which is a comedy, and it runs from May 6th through the 21st. Also, this is the last main stage show that Civic Theater is doing at Marion University before they move up to Carmel in the Center for the Performing Arts. So, definitely worth checking out, the musical comedy Murders of 1940. I'm sure Mom would love it.
Speaking of the Center for the Performing Arts and new residents up there, don't forget Actors Theater of Indiana has a great production of Chicago running right now. If your mom likes speakeasies or likes that that kind of all that hot jazz and the Chicago lifestyle, great production to take your mom to.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Something hot.
Yes.
Something fun to do that the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library is putting on is their 2011 Hometown Roots Concert Series that is for children and audiences and adults of all ages. In other words, it's just an all-age performance. It's kicking off on Sunday, May 22nd at 2 p.m. at the Central Library in the Clues Auditorium. And it's featuring guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jason Wilbur, as well as singer and songwriter and actor Tim Grimm, and folk singer Jan Lucas Grimm. And it's part of a whole series that the library is doing featuring folk singers and other musicians. Again, the Hometown Roots Concert Series kicks off on May 22nd and runs every month through October at the Central Library. You can get more information about that and all the different free library programs that the library offers if you call them at 275-4099.
Very good. And I know for a fact that Jan Lucas Grimm is a mom.
There you go. And happy Mother's Day to her.
Happy Mother's Day to her and to her mom, Beth Grimm. Hey, the fabulous storyteller Kevin Kling, you might have seen him at our Fringe festivals over the years. He is coming back to town for a Mother's Day weekend appearance with his accordionist cohort, Simona Perrin. And Storytelling Arts of Indiana is presenting them. Call soon to grab a ticket, because that's a hot ticket right now.
Good to know. So I got this update, Sharon,
Uh-oh.
From... Melissa Davis, who you hear often on WFYI here. I'm just going to bear with me while I try to read this. This is kind of half the fun.
Okay.
On May 15th at 8 p.m., Vaudeville Lately, that's sort of like Vaudeville Lately. Vaudeville Lately takes the stage at Morty's Comedy Joint, brought to you by Daddy Real Entertainment. The event will showcase, ready for this, stand-up comedy from author, comedian, and amazing person Courtney K. Myers, the CKM comedy parody band Booty, and the Goldfish presenting a taste of their upcoming album, One Hits From Another, plus the comically sultry burlesque troupe Creme de la Femme. How
wow.
fun was that to say?
That
now,
was
there's
blast.
Also giveaways during the show. You get to meet and greet all the performers, blah, blah, blah. Lots of cool stuff. More information at daddyreel.com or just go to mortyscomedy.com.
Is that the band Melissa plays in?
I'm not certain of that.
I think it might be
that
the band
could
Melissa
be.
Plays
could be.
In. So if you've always wondered what that Melissa Davis looks like behind mm-hmm. the voice you hear here, you can check her out. And all of her clever and talented peeps, apparently. hey, maybe your mom or your grandmother, don't forget, great aunts, everybody's the mom to something, right?
Sure.
I have cats. mm-hmm. We have honorary aunties and so forth. Somebody in your family probably appreciates needlework. Frugal and Fancy Indiana Quilts, you heard about it here on this very program a few months ago, but it's still on exhibit at the Indiana State Museum through July 17th, and there's a breadth of examples from the two ends of the spectrum of the title, frugal quilts and fancy quilts. And at one point, quilting was the purview of men, and they had to be very well educated and very highly skilled to be allowed to quilt. So all sorts of fascinating stuff, including a QR quilt, quilt that actually has a barcode quilted in it that works.
Wow, really?
Fascinating stuff.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
The IRT is wrapping up their 39th season with the 39 Steps. It's that Alfred Hitchcock meets Monty Python Tony Award winning play that they're putting on. And just a note about this, they have added a couple additional performances on Friday, May 13th at 7:30 and also Sunday, May 15th at 2 p.m. So those are some new performances that they have added as well, because originally it wasn't going to quite run that long, but it's that funny.
Wait, would your mom like that too? Because it's got that mystery angle?
There you go. I think she will.
All right. Yeah, I see a theater tour with your mom coming up here. Hey, a lot of moms like to see beautifully decorated homes. The Decorator Show House, remember, is open now for daily public tours except for Mondays when it is closed, so everybody can take a deep breath. This year's home is called Evergreen Manor. It's at 4310 North Meridian Street. You can get tickets, $20 at the door, $17 at Marsh Supermarkets. You can get senior price tickets and children's tickets. This is the 50th annual year. All the money goes to a great cause. And you can get more information at showhouseindy.com. Hours are 11 to 6 every day except for Monday through April 15th. So if you can't make it on Mother's Day weekend, you have another week.
Well, Cinderella wasn't a mom, at least as far as we know, but there was a stepmom in there. I'm trying to make a connection here. Well, Cinderella is being performed at Beef and Boards, this theater. It's a musical version with a twist. It's their 2011 season family show, and it has just opened, and it actually runs through July 1st. I'm sorry, it opens May 12th and runs through July 1st, and there's special discounts for kids and definitely a fun thing to do with your mom.
I love it.
There you go. And you get dinner, too, because it's Beef and Boards.
I like it. I like it. Maybe your mom likes chamber music. Well, here is a great deal for you. The Pacifica Quartet is coming in courtesy of the Ensemble Music Society this coming Wednesday, which is May 11th at 7:30 at the Basile Theater at the Glick Indiana History Center. Great, great program. Nice variety. The Schumann Quartet in A Minor, Opus 41, Number 1. The Shostakovich Quartet, Number 8. And the Great Quartet, the Opus 132, A Minor, Beethoven Quartet. Worth the cost of admission right there. See the Beethoven and hear the rest of the concert as well this coming Wednesday, 7:30, Pacifica Quartet, talented young string quartet at the Indiana History Center.
Moms Love Food, of course. This
yes,
is a fun way
true.
To check out some different interesting ethnic restaurants. Tuesday night, May 10th, 10 different ethnic eateries on West 38th Street are participating in what Indiana Humanities are calling Chew on This, which is a way to get together with your neighbors to think and read and talk about food and check out different cool restaurants. It is it starts at 6 o'clock. And it basically takes place at a lot of different restaurants on East 38th Street with different speakers at each one, including David Forsell from Keep Indianapolis Beautiful and Bob Witt from White River State Park and our friend Lou Harry from the IBJ, all different people who are going to be at different restaurants sort of leading different discussions. You can get to the full schedule, and you do have to RSVP for it if you go to indianahumanities.org and link on Chew on This.
I love it. Hey, it's officially race month. Where's your race car impersonation?
Well,
that sounded like a cat.
I had cats on the mind from when you were talking about that before. Okay, we'll just leave it to your imagination.
Right up the left turn wall. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's that month where everybody breaks out the black and white attire, but... because of that, the new exhibit at the Stutz Art Space is called Gray Matters Between Black and White, and it features monochromatic work by a variety of local artists. It opens this Friday night. If you're hearing us Friday night, you might be on your way there as part of First Friday. Artists include Susan Brewer, Martha Carlson, Sue Christensen, Jim Gerard, Ellen Jackson, Adam Noel, Ginny Taylor-Rosner, Martha Sandow, Martha Lindenberg-Vaught, Vicky White, Jack Wicks, and Julia Wicks. So,
wow.
Boy, that is a lot of art to fit in the Stutz Art Space, but go check it out. Limiting the use of color often does... creative things for artists when they have a more limited palette, and that's the whole point of Gray Matters Between Black and White. You can see it 11 to 2, Monday through Friday, or by appointment through May 27th if you can't make it on Friday night, or if you're hearing us on Saturday afternoon.
You know, sure. Not everything is black and white.
That's true.
There you go. last thing I got is an exhibit. If you're perhaps you're out this weekend going to all the First Friday exhibits, but a lot of galleries are starting to do other exhibits, not just on First Fridays. Definitely one to check out. Editions Limited Gallery of Fine Art on East 65th Street in Broad Ripple is having an exhibit titled Private Thoughts in Public Places.
Whoa.
Ooh, I know. I love that title.
I like it.
Photographs by Thomas Mueller, Indianapolis artist. And it's kind of an interesting exhibit. Sort of mundane images in everyday life, but there's kind of a twist on it, too. And it's very clever, some of the works that I've seen already. Again, it's titled Private Thoughts in Public Spaces, which leads me to having some private thoughts I'm having right now. But
you might want to take your sweetie and not your mom to that
maybe.
One.
Good point. Again, that opens on Friday, May 13th at Editions Limited in Broad Ripple.
He's blushing, folks. It's radio. It's hard to see. A couple of last thoughts about your mom, though. Back to where we got into this calendar today.
Of course.
Broad Ripple Art Fair isn't for a couple of weeks, but you can always, in your Mother's Day card to your mom, put a little IOU and plan to take your mom to the Broad Ripple Art Fair.
What a great idea.
Or visit any of the gift shops at local institutions and buy CDs made by local performers or art made by local artists or jewelry made by local jewelers, and the list goes on and on and on. In fact, for my mother, I was thinking of something unusual. She has enough tchotchkes and stuff, and she lives 2,000 miles away, but I sent her some handmade, handcrafted marshmallows from a company based in Columbus, Indiana.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to support the local economy.
The 240,
and the stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. That's a great idea.
So think local, help your mom, and we'll be back next week with more things to do on our calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Claude McNeil's new book, Miracle in Springs Valley, illustrates the story of the French Lick Springs Hotel and West Baden Springs Hotel side by side in Springs Valley. The hotels were fierce rivals from the last half of the 19th century on, attracting visitors with their mineral wells, illegal gambling, and prostitution, only to be born again during the past decade with their enormous renovations. Travis DiNicola spoke with McNeil about his book.
Claude, I know you, and most people in Indianapolis know you, of course, through your work in the theater, as a director, as an educator, but and we'll get to that in just a minute. But the first thing we're actually going to talk about here is a new book that you've put together titled The Miracle in Springs Valley. And this is just, it's a beautiful historical book, sort of a coffee table book, dealing with the hotels down at French Lick. When did you become an author, historian, all of this? Tell me about how this all came to be.
Okay. It kind of is a bit biographical because when I first came to Indiana and visiting, basically, I brought a troupe to French Lick, a cabaret troupe, and that's where I actually met my wife, my wife-to-be then, when I first came in the 80s, and I'd never been to the Midwest before. I saw these two old hotels, one on its last gasp, so to speak, and the other closed down.
Right, back in the late 80s, they weren't in that great a shape at all.
Oh, my God, yeah. And I'd go into that in the book and how it came about. But at any rate, but my wife was teaching school in that town. And, of course, now she, as you probably know, runs here in high school here with all the accolades and everything, doing a great job, by the way. I went through the process of having my shows run there for about 3.5 years, and then I moved the program from Indiana program up to Indianapolis. But alongside doing that, there was Reed Williamson with the Historic Landmarks, which became kind of a friend. We both originally from Connecticut, as a matter of fact. He was working on trying to help save the West Baden Hotel and then the whole story of what happened there. And he also was working with me to save the Athenaeum in Indianapolis because that was was in very bad shape when I first moved to American Cabaret there. And as you know, I'm the founder of American Cabaret and ran it for years. The thing is that my wife and I eventually moved to Indianapolis. And then I worked with Reed a bit on stuff here and then tried to keep the interest in West Baden a little bit, just on really on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. But they eventually involved Bill Cook and all that in the later renovation. But I love historic buildings, and I was the Historic District Commission in New Haven, Connecticut, and then also involved a bit in New York, too, New York City. What happened was that I saw it decline, and then I saw this marvelous miracle caused basically by Bill Cook and his family that turned it around. And so, and all the legislation had to go through here in the state and everything. And I was asked to help on that by Jerry Denbo and all that, who was the state legislator from the area. And while the long story is in the book itself is a very exciting one, but I start right from the very beginnings and bring it right up till now.
And what an amazing history it is.
It is. I mean, there's no other hotels in the country, I think, that has more of a history. I mean, in the stuff that happened there. I mean, it's just amazing how much of American politics is tied up in there. I mean, the most powerful guy in the first half of the 20th century, the first at least third of the 20th century, was Tom Taggart, who owned the French Lick Springs Hotel and had been mayor of Indianapolis and all that. And so my interest, as you know, I love historical things.
Yes.
I'd done a history of Indianapolis called Indian Review. It was a play, which we do for kids in this area and then also around the state. And I originally wrote a short book for the kids of down there and then in the Orange County area, and then eventually expanded it just recently. Bill Cook and I had a conversation, and he kind of challenged me. He said, well, why don't you update this? And I said, well, okay. And as I say, when I published it last year in the beginning, in the introduction, that's what caused me to write the book.
Well, and these two hotels were so amazing. I mean, their histories are so intertwined. I mean, there was quite a great rivalry between them, over the years. And they really, you know, sort of pushed each other and so on. And that's, you know, told throughout the book. And as you mentioned, there's the politics. There's also, you know, just the celebrities and the great circuses and theater and vaudeville. But it all started with the springs, right? The sulfur water.
Absolutely. Well, of course,
which is such a hard thing, I think, for a lot of us to understand today, how, important that was.
Yeah, well, of course, that has an ancient history, too, going way back to Grecian times. In Baden-Baden, for example, over there, that has been going on since before the birth of Christ. I mean, that's been a place to go for, quote, health reasons. Mm-hmm. Of course, over the years, a lot of the claims have been debunked. So they're hilarious if you look at some of them. But somehow, people, I think, help themselves feel better by doing whatever, partaking of whatever those mineral waters did to them, you know.
Yeah.
And it's quite a story, but it started there, the hot springs, you know, and it was another place, and Saratoga Springs in New York.
Sure, of course.
Saratoga Springs and French Lake Springs Hotel in around 1913 and 14 were the two most popular places in America to go for vacations.
Now, Saratoga is, and I've been there, and it's an absolutely beautiful place. Part of the appeal there was not just the springs, of course, but they did have legal gambling and the horse racing.
Yeah. Yes. Now,
that's something that wasn't exactly the same case here.
No, the illegal gambling from 1851 until recently.
Yes. Now we have the legal gambling
legal
down there.
Gambling,
for all that history, it was not legalized gambling.
It was
there.
Something. It was the Wild West in a sense. Of course, it was Las Vegas and Atlantic City before those two places were born.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the center of that in the United States. And there was a lot of stuff going on and which I tell most of in the book. I mean, a lot of in the book, and it's kind of an exciting journey. As a matter of fact, I wrote one section into a melodrama, which it just came out, and we may be putting that on down in that area.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know, like that. Some of the actors who've worked for me in the past want to do that. Yeah. You know.
Oh, very cool. Claude, tell me a bit about, you had some collaborators on this book. I mean, there's some great historical photographs that are used.
Yeah.
Also some beautiful illustrations throughout the book.
Yeah, okay. Well, Mary Lou Sessions worked for me many years. I called her the art designer, basically, because she did all the photographs, arrangements and all that. Of course, she did the visuals, the slides and everything in all my cabaret shows.
Sure.
And so she has a really great sense of that. So that was a very important thing. And then Marilyn Longmire is just an incredible sketch artist. And, well, she's done wonderful things. She's from Birdseye, Indiana. And she went to the Heron School of Art here, where my daughter goes now, Amanda. But she just has this pointillistic style that just is exciting. And we just latched on. It got the feeling, especially of the old section of the book, which is where we use most of those. They're just wonderful ladies, extraordinarily talented, both of them in their own ways. Yeah.
Well, and again, it's a very attractive book with so many fun, great stories. You can just sort of flip open almost any page and find a neat one. I know that I had mentioned there's a lot of information about the old circuses and vaudeville. Was there a favorite story for you that came out of this in your research and writing?
Well, yeah, I think that my favorite story actually was the rebuilding in 01 and on into 02 of the West Baden Springs Hotel at the turn of the 20th century.
Thanks to
Bill
Cook.
Which was miraculous, and it was the largest freestanding globe in the world until the Superdome in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
That many, you know, over a half a century later, and it was such an audacious thing to decide to do by this man Sinclair, who was an Indiana native, but the big, huge ideas and the excitement. One of my shows, I've been working on two big shows over the last few years, and I love it now. I can take a lot of time, but one of them is about this Age of Edison and how people would just simply go and do things, the inventions in that short period of time, about 30 to 40 years there, is probably more than all the rest of history, human history, much of it here in the United States. And it was during this time that these hotels really found their footing, and they were right in the midst of all that. French Lick was the first town in Indiana to have electric lights, for example. There's a lot of it like that. But anyway, my favorite
just
story
amazing.
Is how he, within less than a year, built this huge, wonderful hotel with a great dome and got it opened. And then the story just goes on from there. It's when they renovated it, Bill Cook even said, he said, you know, it took them about five times longer to renovate it
than it did to build in the first place.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Now, Claude, you mentioned some other theatrical projects you've been working on, some other things you've been doing in addition to this book, Miracle in Springs Valley. Briefly, what can you share with me as far as current projects? I know you've been doing a lot of great education work and some other things on the horizon. We have just a few moments here.
Okay, sure. All right. Well, I've done shows in California, New York, New Orleans, and Tampa over since I retired from here, mm-hmm. from American Cabaret Theater. But I've got a couple exciting things starting. My assistant from the Florida shows, where my principal producer, Judy Lisi, is from, and I are starting up, well, he's really behind it, a new cabaret theater in New York City, mm-hmm. Where I started out, basically. So
sure.
it's a nice thing to return to. Then I'm, there's a London producer who's working on an Asian tour of a couple of my shows. We've been putting together, maybe starting out in Seoul, South Korea, and going around what they call an English-speaking tour. And I've got two, as I say, two big projects I've been working on. One, a sort of a serious musical, if you will, and the other is a big cabaret show. Mm-hmm. Those are the things I've been working on. Plus my poetry, I've been editing a lot and setting up shows with and whatnot. And I've been working with Heron High School. I was
sure.
a volunteer for my wife and whatnot, and doing some Shakespeare, which I started out with and whatnot. And that's just been a very exciting experience. That's really quite a phenomenal circumstance over there. And I'm very glad to be part of it. Janet has brought in all professional artists of whatever kind, music or whatever, and to do the arts over there, and it really has paid off. Those kids are phenomenal.
Yeah, and just a phenomenal program overall. There,
it is. Yeah, and I'm going on about that too. But those are the things I'm doing right now. Having a great time. Reading a lot. I don't do full-time stuff. One of my pet projects.
Well, I know you said that, you know, I mean, you're sort of retired, but I think I just counted eight different projects you've got going on there. I mean, you certainly have an affinity for those great inventors that were so audacious at the turn of the last century, it seems. Claude, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Travis DiNicola with Claude McNeil. His new book, Miracle in Springs Valley, is available at local bookstores and through Amazon.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owls Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I will find out about a new major gift to the gallery at the Heron School of Art and Design, as well as get a preview of the Indianapolis School of Ballet's production of Coppelia.
Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.